Hello, and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday, the 3rd of March 2026. My name is Guy, and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers and recorded at home by Leslie Court and Margaret Simpson. We also have a poem from Jenny. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 6:46 a.m. and sunset is at 5:48 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events, births and deaths from March the 3rd in history. In 1284, the Statute of Rhuddlan, enacted by King Edward I, incorporated the Principality of Wales into England. This formally ended the power of the native Welsh princes and placed the territory under the direct control of the English crown. In 1592, Trinity College Dublin and its library was founded by Royal Charter by Elizabeth I on the former site of the Priory of All Hallows. In 1891, the penalty spot kick rule in association football was conceived, which came into effect the following season. In 1931, the Star Spangled Banner officially became the US national anthem by congressional resolution. The lyrics by Francis Scott Key, written in 1814, were set to John Stafford Smith's 18th century tune, the Anacreonect Song. In 1968, pirate station Radio Caroline went off the air when its ships Mi Amigo and Caroline were boarded and seized before the day's broadcasting began. Born on this day. In 1838, George William Hill, American astronomer who calculated the moon's orbit and was considered to be the greatest master of celestial mechanics of his time, was born in New York. And born on this day. In 1838, George William Hill was born in New York. Hill was an American astronomer who calculated the moon's orbit and was considered to be the greatest master of celestial mechanics of his time. In 1847, Alexander Graham Bell was born in Edinburgh. He was a British-American inventor who is credited with patenting the first practical telephone. In 1918, Peter O'Sullivan, British horse racing commentator known as the Voice of Racing, was born in Kenmare, Ireland. In the world of entertainment, there were several notable births on this day. In 1911, Jean Harlow, American actress and 1930s sex goddess, was born in Kansas City, Missouri. In 1920, James Doohan, Canadian actor best known for playing Scotty in Star Trek, was born in Vancouver, British Columbia. In 1926, Lise Asier, Swiss singer who won the first ever Eurovision Song Contest in 1956, was born in Rupperswil, Switzerland. In 1941, Mike Prendergast, British rock vocalist and guitarist with The Searchers, whose biggest hit was Needles and Pins, was born in Liverpool. In 1947, Dave Mount, English rocker with the group Mud, was born in Carshalton, Surrey. Also in 1947, Jennifer Warnes, America's singer, most famous for the song Up Where We Belong, was born in Seattle, Washington State. In 1971, Charlie Brooker, English television reviewer and writer of Black Mirror, was born in Reading. In 1973, Alison King, British actress best known for playing Carla Connor in Coronation Street, was born in Leicester. In 1954, Chris Hughes, English record producer and rock drummer with Adam and the Ants, was born in London. In 1977, Ronan Keating, Irish pop singer with Boyzone and a solo artist whose biggest hit was When You Say Nothing At All, was born in Bayside, Dublin. And in 1997, Camila Cabello, Cuban-American singer-songwriter, was born in Colomar, Cuba. And deaths on this day. In 1324, Andrew Harclay, 1st Earl of Carlisle, English knight and military leader who won the Battle of Boroughbridge in 1322 for King Edward II during the Despenser War between the monarch and his rebellious barons, was hanged, drawn and quartered for treason, aged 53. Harclay had initiated negotiations with the Scots on his own accord, and he signed a peace treaty with Robert the Bruce. This act was without royal sanction and amounted to treason. In 1703, Robert Hooke, English physicist, astronomer, geologist, meteorologist and architect, and who has been called England's Leonardo da Vinci, died aged 67. In 1765, William Stukeley, English physician and archaeologist who pioneered investigation of Stonehenge and Avebury, died aged 77. In 2010, Michael Foote, British Labour politician and writer, leader of the opposition from 1980 to 1983, died aged 96. In 2018, Roger Bannister, English athlete and first sub-4-minute mile runner, died of Parkinson's disease, aged 88. Bannister had set a record time of 3 minutes 59.4 seconds at the Iffley Road track in Oxford in 1954. And in the world of entertainment, in 1959, Lou Costello, American comedian and actor, died of a heart attack, aged 52. In 1983, Georges Prosper Remy, who used the pen name Hergé, Belgian comic book creator, died aged 75. He is probably most famous for creating the character Tintin in a series of comics in the 1940s. In 1999, Lee Phillips, American actor and director, probably most famous for portraying Ellery Queen on TV, died aged 72. In 1987, Danny Kaye, born David Daniel Kaminsky, American comedian and actor, died of heart failure, aged 76. In 2018, David Ogden Stiers, American stage and screen actor who played Major Charles Emerson Winchester III in MASH, died of bladder cancer, aged 75. And now we have a notice about a school reunion, followed by the news for this week. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles.
The following notice will be of interest to ex-Gosford Hill pupils, as there will be a 50th reunion for pupils of Gosford School who in July 1976 either left Gosford Hill or transferred into the sixth form. The date for this reunion is Saturday, the 9th of May. It's going to be held at the Six Bells in Kidlington, starting from 4 p.m. and going on for, I don't know how long, but it's certainly going to continue on into the evening. Food will be available for you to purchase. This invitation is from a Christine Bauer, and there is no further information. So for anybody who's interested in going to the 50th reunion, I suggest you contact Gosford Hill School Reception, and their telephone number is 01865 374 971 and ask the receptionist for more information. And if you do go, I hope you enjoy meeting up with friends of many years ago.
A new scheme has been launched to improve accessibility for bus passengers with disabilities. The Helping Hand card scheme, now available on Pullum's services in Gloucestershire and Oxfordshire, provides a discreet way for passengers to communicate their needs to bus drivers. The cards, which are free to obtain, carry a brief written instruction, such as requesting more time to take a seat or notifying of a visual impairment, that can be shown to the driver when boarding. Luke Marion, Managing Director of Pullum's, said, "With the expansion and growth of Pullum's in recent years, and a series of new routes too, it felt like the right time to deliver the Helping Hand scheme via the network. It's proven to be a popular and useful initiative for both the Oxford Bus Company and Thames Travel, and reinforces our commitment to providing accessible transport for all. There are 12 different card options covering needs such as visual impairment or deafness. the reverse of the card can display emergency contact details. This feature is particularly helpful for individuals with conditions like Alzheimer's, dementia, or epilepsy. Cards can be requested by emailing info@pullums.co.uk or calling 01451 820 369.
Staff at the Oxford Mail took part in a sponsored sleepout to help reduce youth homelessness. Members of NewsQuest IT department led the initiative on Saturday, the 21st of February, to raise funds and awareness for homelessness charity Centrepoint. Three members of the team, Ian Johnson, the IT director, Lisa Hudson, IT system support manager, and Pete Franford, IT system security specialist, braved uncomfortable conditions outside the print centre in Oseney Mead and to date have raised a total of £844 in sponsorship. Mr. Johnson said, "We got into our sleeping bags and huddled against the NewsQuest Oxford buildings to avoid the drizzle that rained on us during the night. We had decent sleeping bags and mats and slept, but they only provided minimum comfort. Luckily, it was not a cold night. I woke up on Sunday morning and thought that whereas we would be going to get some breakfast and then go home to family and comfort, there are young people who have to sleep rough and do not know what will happen the next morning, where their next meal is coming from, what the day will bring, and whether they will be sleeping out for another night or week or month or longer." Mr. Johnson added, "Our one night on a hard floor outside was a humbling experience, but nothing like what homeless people have to face. I'm glad we did it to raise money for such a worthy cause and to raise awareness about young people in such a precarious situation." Oxford Mail publisher NewsQuest has announced a £4 million partnership with Centrepoint, the UK's leading youth homelessness charity. Throughout 2026, NewsQuest will join forces with the charity to help support its vital work tackling youth homelessness. Central to the partnership will be NewsQuest gifting the charity advertising across its portfolio of titles, online and in print, to the value of at least £4 million. Centrepoint began as a night shelter in Soho in 1969 and has grown into a national charity supporting more than 15,000 young people each year with housing, health and skills training. Despite this progress, more than 118,000 young people faced homelessness last year, making the charity's work more vital than ever. Henry Walker, CEO of NewsQuest, said earlier, "The rise of youth homelessness is unfortunately a story of our times. We hope we can make a positive impact supporting the amazing work that Centrepoint do, not only with £4 million of advertising, but also through our local journalism and the huge reach and engagement this has in communities across the country."
An awareness campaign is calling for a clearer distinction between mental health illnesses and everyday emotional experiences. The national initiative, Rethinking Mental Health Together, launched by Whitney-based author and SinoLoss CIC Chief Executive Barry Ingleton, aims to bring greater clarity and care to conversations around mental health. He said, "This is not about silencing people or dismissing suffering. It's about listening properly. Not all emotions are illness, but all emotions deserve to be heard." When we understand that distinction, we protect those living with serious mental illness while giving everyone else permission to experience life honestly without assuming they are unwell. The campaign argues that while decades of mental health advocacy have rightly reduced stigma and promoted openness, there is now a growing concern among teachers, parents, clinicians and support workers about the casual use of clinical language to describe normal human emotions. These concerns focus on the risks of mislabeling everyday distress as mental illness without proper assessment or context. The campaign warns that this trend can blur understanding, create false expectations, and make it harder for people to process natural emotional responses. Mr. Ingleton, who has bipolar disorder and leads the education and well-being organisation Sinalos CIC, emphasised that the campaign does not challenge the reality of mental illness or the need for timely access to treatment. Instead, it seeks to restore balance and understanding at a national level. At the heart of the campaign are three areas of focus. The first calls for the Mental Health Act to include a principle recognising the difference between natural emotional experiences and diagnosable mental illness, while making clear that clinical decisions remain the responsibility of trained professionals. The second area emphasises prevention and early intervention, supporting approaches in schools, workplaces and communities that encourage emotional well-being without medicalising distress. The third area addresses language, highlighting how the spread of clinical terminology outside professional settings can make it difficult for individuals to talk about their feelings without assuming a diagnosis. The campaign warns that misusing clinical language can add to anxiety, slow down recovery, and put further strain on already stretched services. It also argues that medicalising normal distress risks undermining public trust in the seriousness of genuine mental illness, potentially making it harder for those who need care to be believed and supported. As part of its next phase, a public event will be held on March the 6th in Whitney, bringing together voices from education, health and the wider community.
More support for children with special educational needs is being rolled out in Oxfordshire. Oxfordshire County Council has approved more than £1 million per year to expand its Enhanced Pathway Scheme in mainstream schools, bringing the total investment to £3 million per year. The funding will create 20 new enhanced pathways in addition to the 40 already in place. The scheme was first introduced in 2021 and 2022 and funded at around £500,000 per year. Enhanced pathways offer targeted support in mainstream settings for children with ASEND, including small group teaching and tailored curricula. These address children's social, emotional, sensory, and academic needs. The new funding will support the continued development of these pathways across the county. The foundations of the additional pathways will be decided towards the end of the spring term. Schools will have the opportunity to apply to host the new schemes. Parents seeking more information about available SEND support are encouraged to speak directly with the child's school.
Calls have been made to return an ancient Druidic circle relic from a celebrity's former £8.5 million Oxfordshire mansion to its place of origin in Jersey. It was revealed last month that James Corden had scrapped plans for a new home and sold his abandoned home near Henley after it was left to rot. The Gavin and Stacey star and his wife, Julia Carey, were granted permission in April 2024 to demolish the 1960s house which they had previously bought in the county. Now calls have been made for an ancient relic to be returned from the mansion's grounds to its source of origin in Jersey. found on the 43 acres of land, is a druidic circle of druid temple stones called the Mont de la Ville dolmens. These were brought over from Jersey in 1788 by the former owner of the Park Place estate. Dr. Hervé Duval Gatignon, Jersey's field archaeologist, said that the dolmen dates back to around 6,000 years ago. He told ITV, "It's not impossible, it could be done, but it'll require quite a lot of discussion to make that happen, and also we don't exactly know where the site was excavated. It was somewhere in the parade ground, but the exact footing of the stones, for instance, we don't exactly know. There are a couple of paintings and drawings from the time that might help us relocate the exact site, but it would be quite a collective effort to make this work. I'm not sure it's a priority for now." Mr. Corden purchased Templecombe House in Wargrave near Henley for approximately £8.5 million in December 2020. The dream home appeared on the market in 2018 with glossy promotional photos from the time showing the house built in the 1960s with its unique Bauhaus style, a tennis court and covered swimming pool. But urban explorer YouTube channels exposed the house in a dilapidated state in videos uploaded in 2022. Having waited a year for approval, objections were tabled towards the demolition by both South Oxfordshire District Council and English Heritage before it was finally given the green light. Despite this and earlier reports stating that the project was making its way through the planning process still, it was revealed that Mr. Corden had sold the property for an undisclosed fee. The Daily Mail has reported James Corden has scrapped ambitious plans to turn his dilapidated Oxfordshire bolt hole into a lavish country retreat by selling the property for an undisclosed fee more than 6 years after buying it. The actor originally bought the highly distinctive Art Deco Templecombe house on the outskirts of Henley for £8 million in 2020, with plans to raise the property and build a six-bedroom mansion for his family in its place.
The annual spring market held in Tame is set to return next month for a long weekend of crafts and street food in the town centre. Tame Spring Market has been a popular event for the last decade, since it was founded in 2017. Now hosted by Zoom Events, the large-scale street market will take over the space next to the town hall and along Upper High Street from March the 5th until the 8th. It is the first of two visits from a market by Zoom next year, with the autumn market also scheduled for October. This year's eclectic mix of market stalls will include street food, artisan groceries, arts, crafts, clothing, jewellery and accessories to bring colour and vibrancy to the centre of the town. A spokesperson for the event said, "With Mother's Day just round the corner, this year's spring market is the perfect place to pick up something thoughtful and a little different. Visitors can browse stalls featuring ethically sourced silver jewellery, crystal products, handmade coasters, pottery, and even subscriptions for beautiful flowers. Alongside these unique finds, there'll be a tempting selection of hot street food to enjoy while you wander, plus plenty of interesting groceries to take home. Opening hours of the event are from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Thursday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday. Enjoy!
A decision for a village on the edge of Oxford to become a town will help it to speak for itself amid major plans for growth, its MP has said. Kidlington Parish Council voted unanimously to grant town status at a meeting at the end of February. The Kidlington Gap between the village and Oxford has been the target of numerous major developments in recent years. Oxford United's new football stadium will be built at the Triangle, with construction starting this year. Exeter College is planning to build a research and innovation district on a 30-hectare site next to Oxford Parkway. There are 370 homes being built on land east of Bicester Road in Gosford, and hundreds of homes are set to be built nearby on the Oxford North Golf Club, forcing the course's closure last October. Liberal Democrat MP Callum Miller of Bicester and Woodstock said he respected the outcome and supported the decision for Kidlington to become a town. He added, "We're in a period of rapid change with major growth pressures across Oxfordshire and local government reorganisation on the horizon. In that context, it's entirely reasonable for communities to want a stronger voice and clearer representation." Kidlington Parish Council has run a thorough and transparent consultation with extensive resident engagement and a clear recognition of Kidlington's history and identity. Town status will help Kidlington speak for itself, protect its distinct place in Oxfordshire, and make sure decisions about its future are shaped with local people, not done to them. Green Councillor Ian Middleton, who represents Kidlington on the Parish, District and County Councils, said, "I think one of the reasons why Kidlington is making that step now is that it makes the town more defensible from any land grabs by Greater Oxford. We're a town in our own right now, and it gives us a stronger position rather than being absorbable by this single monolithic city." Changes to the government's planning rules last year mean that greenbelt land around towns get greater protection, while greenbelt land around villages has been downgraded to greybelt. A separate change in government policy also means that Kidlington would get greater police cover if it is classed as a town. Parish Councillor Melanie Morehouse said, "The reason the conversation came about was to protect our green belt and to allow the town to have more policing. What residents have told us is that they don't want Kidlington to be a suburb of Oxford. This is us as a council trying to take care of Kidlington's interests." The Parish Council held a number of consultations with the public on whether to go ahead with becoming a town, but there was not a referendum. Helen Marshall, a member of the think tank Poets, planning Oxfordshire's environment and transport sustainability, said, "We feel it should be very much up to Kidlington to decide its own classification, but the situation does illustrate the point that recent Greenbelt policy changes are not clear and seem likely to undermine decent planning. The change in Kidlington's status comes as the government progresses with plans to restructure two-tier councils like Oxfordshire, where services are split between a county and district councils. Oxfordshire's existing councils will be abolished and replaced with either one, two or three unitary councils that each have control of all services. Oxford City Council is backing the three council option, which they say would allow them to build more homes on greybelt land to help meet demand for housing in the city and allow people to commute more closely to work rather than living in towns further away." Leader of Oxford City Council, Susan Brown, said she welcomed the decision for Kidlington to become a town. She said, "As the parish council says, this will help unlock important new funding streams to support Kidlington residents and businesses. Our local government reorganisation proposal to create three councils across Oxfordshire and West Berkshire would ensure a future Kidlington Town Council had a louder voice, working in partnership with the new Greater Oxford Council, than it would have under two unitaries or a single mega council. In particular, it would play an important part within the new neighbourhood level governance that we are proposing to introduce." A total of 26 parish councils within Oxford's Green Belt wrote to Secretary of State Steve Reid opposing the Greater Oxford option. In their letter, they said, "It does not represent a sensible geography which will help to increase housing supply and meet local needs. The local plans already provide housing greatly above local needs. It will create urban sprawl, significantly exacerbating access problems for commuters, journey times and traffic congestion and pollution. We also object to the proposal because it will damage rural communities that currently do not see themselves as in any way part of Oxford City. It creates an undue advantage for the urban city and disadvantage for the rural parishes. Oxford City's urban population of 165,200 will dominate and subsume the 48 rural Greenbelt parishes with only 31% of the population. Lisa Warne, director of CPRE Oxfordshire, said the three council proposal would swallow up large parts of the Oxford Green Belt. She added that the option would be more expensive and that the proposed population of 240,000 was far below the government's target of 500,000 for new unitary councils. A public consultation on local government reorganisation is ongoing and will close on March the 26th. Kidlington's population stood at 13,600 in 2021, but this is set to increase dramatically due to the number of developments planned there.
Oxford residents will no longer have to pay for their bulky waste to be removed after the City Council set their new budget. Councillors voted to approve the budget for 2026-2027 at a five-hour-long council meeting on Monday night, February the 23rd. The Labour Group, who lead the council as a minority administration, proposed that the charge for collecting bulky waste should be removed as part of their budget proposal. At the moment, the collection charges are £34.50 for white goods and £23.50 for household furniture, with discounts available for those who receive housing benefit, council tax support, or universal credit with a housing element. The council is also funding additional crime and antisocial behaviour officers in collaboration with Thames Valley Police, which would focus on tackling fly tipping. In a speech, Cabinet Member for Finance Ed Turner said, "It's illegal, it's antisocial, and the message to anyone tempted to fly tip is this: you can have your bulky waste collected for free. We will start waiving the charge on the 2nd of March before the new financial year. If you fly tip instead, then we will come to get you." The charge was first introduced by the City Council in 2021 when the Labour Group was in charge due to financial challenges caused by the pandemic. Removing the charge will cost an estimated £102,000 per year, along with the additional £40,000 one-off payment to deal with added demand. Other investments in the Labour budget include £32 million into buying 260 temporary accommodation homes, build 1,692 new council homes, and put £1 million into fixing the roof at Oxford Ice Rink. Funding for an additional verge cut, gritting cycle paths, and a £20,000 annual fund for supporting live music events for 2 years were also part of the budget. Council tax will also increase by 2.99%. The Lib Dem group proposed that the bulky waste charge would only be removed for people who are already eligible for discounts. Lib Dem group leader Chris Smouton said, "That means that people on low incomes will get that benefit right away, and we can find out whether the measure is as effective as we hope it is at a much lower cost, saving £317,000 over 4 years. The Green Group also proposed a 50% discount on the bulky waste charge instead of removing it in full. Leader of the Green Party, Chris Jarvis, said, the group wanted to reduce the financial burden on residents, but that they doubted that removing the charge would reduce fly tipping. All the amendments to the Labour Group's budget proposals were voted down. The budget was passed with 21 voting in favour, including all Labour and one independent, 18 voting against, including all Lib Dem and IOA councillors, and 8 abstentions, most of whom were Green councillors.
Did Cotton Wantage MP Ollie Glover has challenged the government to improve the standard of rail travel, saying working toilets should not be considered a luxury. The Liberal Democrat transport spokesperson made the case during the committee stage of the government's railways bill, calling for improvements in affordability, accessibility and efficiency, and setting out the party's vision for a passengers first approach. He said, "The modern rail passenger quite rightly expects more than they often get. It should no longer be considered a luxury to have functioning Wi-Fi or a mobile phone signal so that people can be productive on the train. Toilets should be reliable, a seat should not be considered a luxury, and there should be adequate space for luggage, pushchairs, bicycles and so on." The Lib Dems tabled several amendments to the bill, including a comprehensive passengers charter. Other proposals include a rails-to-trails programme to convert disused railway lines into active travel routes and new rules on electronic audio devices on trains. The Railways Bill is expected to return to the House of Commons for its report stage in the coming weeks.
A hunt raised £1,000 for Thames Valley Air Ambulance during Boxing Day meet. The Bicester Hunt with Wadden Chase raised the funds at its event in Winslow, when more than 1,000 people gathered in support of the hunt and the charity through bucket collections. Ollie Cornick, master of the Bicester Hunt with Wadden Chase, said, "Our hunt has raised thousands of pounds for the Thames Valley Air Ambulance over the years through our long-standing charity link-up, and we are incredibly proud to continue supporting such an important cause. Our Boxing Day meet once again demonstrated the strength of local community spirit and the continued commitment to be supporting emergency medical services that save lives. Thames Valley Air Ambulance provides advanced critical care across Berkshire, Buckinghamshire and Oxfordshire. The charity operates 365 days a year and depends entirely on public donations to fund its service." A spokesman for the charity praised the fundraising effort, saying, "This is an amazing amount of money raised, and I'd like to say a huge thank you from all the team here at Thames Valley Air Ambulance for your ongoing fundraising efforts. The Bicester Hunt with Wadden Chase follows trail hunting, where hounds follow a pre-laid trail in accordance with the Hunting Act of 2004.
A Wantage Cat Rescuers group are campaigning for widespread neutering to curb stray cat overpopulation and the spread of feline disease, FIV. The Neuter Rangers, a volunteer group of 4 women in Wantage working to help stray and feral cats, said 2 cases of feline immunodeficiency virus, FIV, in Oxfordshire. 2 sick tomcats were taken in by the rescuers, one in Tame and one in Littlemore in Oxford, both of which tested positive for the illness, which affects cats' immune systems and makes them vulnerable to other types of disease. Jess Diamond, a co-founder of the group, said spaying outdoor cats is the best way to stop the spread of the life-limiting illness. She said one of the most important and most responsible things that people can do to stop the spread is to neuter their cats, as it drastically reduces the fighting between tomcats and their urge to mate, which is what spreads the disease. "We're in a massive cats overpopulation crisis. One of the reasons we set up the neuter ranges is that we want to help stray and feral cats because there's no one else looking out for them and they're breeding like mad. Last year, the group facilitated the neutering of 311 cats in Oxfordshire, and already this year they've spayed another 75. The tomcat in Tame was in a complete state when he was found at a new-built housing estate where two stray female cats, one of them pregnant, were also discovered by Miss Diamond and her co-volunteers. The poor boy, he was really beaten up, she said. Because the two females were in heat, not spayed, and they'd been let out, they were attracting tomcats from all over. Both of them are at risk of having FIV, as are their unborn kittens. God knows how far it has spread. Not every cat can be tested for the disease when they're brought in to be neutered, partly because snap testing is unreliable and partly because the tests are too expensive. But they're assessed case by case and those that need it are taken in for medical care. FIV means that cats need special care for the rest of their lives and have to be kept indoors to prevent the disease from spreading to other pets. The neuter rangers said neutering should become a legal requirement for outdoor cats, just as microchipping is. Ms. Diamond said, "When we started, none of us realised the state of the situation. We were initially just concentrating on feral colonies out on farms and things like that, but now we're getting calls all the time for stray cats."
Staff at an Oxford museum describe saying goodbye to a beloved brown bear as unbearably difficult, as it retires from display after 8 years. The brown bear, which greeted visitors to the Oxford University Museum of Natural History for nearly a decade, has come off display one last school half term. A tactile taxidermy display, the bear has been stroked and hugged by more than 1 million visitors in the 8 years she stood in the museum. Standing in the main court for so long has left the brown bear's coat a little worse for wear, and the display will now move behind the scenes. A spokesperson for the Oxford University Museum of Natural History said, "Some goodbyes are unbearably difficult. The brown bear has come off display at Oxford University Museum of Natural History after sharing one last half-term holiday season. After all of this love, she is looking a little threadbare and will be retiring from public life." The museum has had touchable specimens on display for more than 20 years, including a black bear, which still stands at the front of the museum. The museum spokesperson added, "These objects make our displays accessible to a wider audience, engaging people who cannot read exhibition text, visitors who speak other languages, or have sensory disabilities. The chance to touch a real animal, fossil, rock, or mineral can create a deeper understanding and connection with the natural world. The brown bear may be retiring, but the black bear is bearing up a lot better and will remain on display. So bear hugs are definitely not off the table." A man celebrating his 100th birthday in Oxfordshire has put his long life down to having a tot of whiskey and enjoyable chocolate. Sweet tooth centenarian Walter Allen was joined by family and friends as he celebrated his 100th birthday at his Cumnor Hill care home. The team at Chorley Grove Care Home organised a special afternoon tea in his honour, complete with champagne, cake and plenty of sweet treats for Walter's family and friends. Mr. Allen has lived at Chorley Grove for the past 3 years, puts his long life down to a regular tot of whiskey, as well as a love of chocolate. He is particularly fond of white chocolate buttons. The former local government officer at Poole Borough Council has lived in Oxford for 6 years and spent most of his life in Poole, Dorset, moving to Abingdon to be near his family in 2020. Born in 1926, he's witnessed a century of extraordinary change. A keen cricketer in his younger days, Mr. Allen played for Poole Old Grammarians, now Poole Town Cricket Club, and once he stopped playing, he took on the umpire's role. He's remained a devoted fan of the game ever since and has seen the sport transform dramatically. He still enjoys watching England play from the comfort of his armchair. Emergency parcel measures have been enacted amid illness disruption to Royal Mail deliveries. Early on Monday, February the 23rd, it was reported on social media that Royal Mail's East Oxford delivery office was suffering from some difficulties, with post and parcels from the surrounding areas suffering. The postcodes the office serves are 0X3, 0X4, 0X33, 0X44, 0X49. Since then, the company has confirmed that this is the case and said it is due to sickness. A Royal Mail spokesman said, East Oxford Delivery Office has experienced a short-term increase in sickness absence, which has affected deliveries locally. The delivery business has since put in place temporary emergency measures to ensure that post is properly prioritised. The spokesperson added, "We have brought in additional temporary staff to support the unit and improve reliability."
A review of fines for drivers in Oxford should be carried out, according to a county councillor. David Henwood, Shadow Cabinet Member for Transport Management, has spoken out after it emerged that more drivers are being fined year on year after driving through bus gate restrictions in Oxford High Street. From 7:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. daily, only buses, taxis and licensed private hire vehicles are allowed to drive through the high street, while other vehicles face a £70 fine if caught on camera. Camera enforcement began in 2007. A spokesman for the County Council provided the fines total for the High Street bus gate for the past 2 years. In 2024, there were over 25,000 fines, totalling £554,000+, while in 2025 there were 31,646, totalling £822,000+. Mr. Henwood, a county councillor for Rosehill and Littlemore, said, "The total number of fines for the High Street bus gate is still going up after 20 years, and you have to ask why such large numbers of drivers are still being fined after all this time. I think it's time for a review of the High Street bus gate restrictions. I think 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. would be sufficient to reduce emissions. There needs to be a proper review of all the restrictions for drivers across the city." In October, a £5 congestion charge was introduced for drivers passing 6 charging points in the city centre during the day. Figures revealed at the end of January showed that 31,000 fines had been given out to motorists who did not pay the congestion charge, generating more than £700,000. Mr. Henwood added, "It's a minefield for drivers in Oxford now. You have the bus gates, the congestion charge, a zero emission zone, and soon we could have traffic filters. I think there should be a more universal approach to restrictions, which is easier to understand, and drivers need to be consulted. If drivers have to be penalised at all, a universal approach would be a more considerate option." When asked what fines can be spent on, a spokesman for the County Council said, "Under the legislation, any surplus from civil enforcement must be ring-fenced and can only be spent on operating the enforcement service, public transport provision, highway improvement or maintenance or environmental improvements." The spokesman added, "Bus gates are an important aid to improving bus reliability and easing congestion in Oxford. Confused.com, a price comparison website which focuses on insurance, has conducted a survey of the UK to discover the worst offending streets for generating fines, and Oxford High Street was highlighted. Data revealed that over £42 million was collected by councils for offences committed on the worst offending streets over a 12-month period.
Major changes have been announced to the Oxford Tube coach service to and from London. From Monday, March the 9th, there will be a new stop close to Acton Main Line, with easy connections across London via the Elizabeth Line, including Heathrow. And Shepherd's Bush will be served on every journey for Westfield Shopping Centre, with improvements made following passenger feedback to the Oxford Tube. A spokesman for the bus operator added, "We'll no longer serve White City, but you'll now have consistent access to one of the UK's most popular shopping and leisure destinations on every trip." In addition, there will be new weekend journeys to and from Whitney and Carterton, following a growth in popularity from West Oxfordshire. This will see two morning journeys to London on Saturdays and Sundays, and two late afternoon or early evening return journeys. Weekday journeys will continue as early morning departures to London and late afternoon or early evening returns, now with improved punctuality. However, the Bicester Village trial service, which was launched in 2024, will now come to an end as part of the Oxford Tube's route simplification. The company advises passengers travelling to Bicester Village to go from Oxford City Centre via the Stagecoach S5 service.
Notice to listeners of Oxhawk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxtalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, "Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.
New tourist attractions based on motoring, technology, food and local history are being created for Oxford Castle Quarter in a bid to bring in 300,000 visitors a year. Business venture Oxford Unwrapped is preparing to bring four new visitor attractions to empty units at the site off New Road, which features Malmaison Hotel and bars, cafes and restaurants. The new attractions are being created during the 20th anniversary of the launch of Oxford Castle Quarter, which was launched by a visit from Queen Elizabeth II in 2006. They will occupy a number of previously unoccupied units close to the Oxford Castle Unlocked Visitor Centre. The regenerated area has experienced a relatively high turnover of businesses and has struggled with some empty premises. There have been claims it has struggled to attract visitors from busier parts of the city centre, such as the nearby Westgate. That could change with the launch of the new attractions. These include Virtual Oxford, a high-tech blend of virtual and mixed reality experiences, Fuel, featuring Pit Stop Cafe, the Adrenaline Lounge, and Car Corner, celebrating the county's motor heritage, The Stocks at Castle Quarter, a social hub bringing together the best of the county's food, drinks, stories and traditions, and Oxfordshire 360 Degrees, a cinematic, multi-mode, immersive experience looking at the county's history. By night, the space will be transformed into a planetarium, which will also celebrate the region's musical heritage. Phil Pike, founder of Oxford Unwrapped, said, "After years of meticulous planning, partnership, building and design work, we're thrilled to be bringing Oxford Unwrapped to life. Each of our four attractions celebrates a different facet of this remarkable city and county, its history, its innovation, its stories and its people. By autumn, visitors will be able to experience Oxford in ways they've never imagined." Mr. Pike has previously worked on projects for the London Palladium, the Hippodrome in London, Tussauds Group, including Madame Tussauds visitor attractions around the world, and at theme parks such as PortAventura in Spain, Alton Towers and the London Eye. The opening of Oxford Unwrapped will fill all the vacant units at the castle complex and follows the opening of vegetarian Indian restaurant Namaste and Chinese dining concept Dishion. City and County Councillor Susanna Pressel said, "The Oxford Castle Quarter is such a special site. It is very central and at the heart of Oxford's most historic quarter. It is full of unique treasures, some of them 1,000 years old, and yet many people, whether they are residents or visitors, rarely or never go near it. This development should change all that. The four different attractions seem to have something for everyone, young and older. It sounds as if they will both be entertaining and educational."
A driver texted with both hands and steered with his knees while behind the wheel of a 40-ton heavy goods vehicle driving along the A34 near Oxford. The incident occurred on Monday afternoon as Thames Valley Police stopped the dangerous driver on the dual carriageway. A spokesman for the force said the male was on his phone as he drove his 40-ton foreign-registered heavy goods vehicle along the A34 whilst texting with both hands. He steered with his knees and watched a movie on a tablet whilst bouncing off curbs and straying into the other lane. He denied using his phone despite the motorcyclist being alongside him for some time, until his own internal dash cam bubbled him up. The incident was one of many offences spotted in Oxford as Thames Valley Police officers ran an Operation Treacher check. Using an unmarked police motorcyclist to spot offences, which were then dealt with by officers intercepting the offender by using a car or marked motorcycle.
A new lab and office space will be coming to Oxford in place of the former Oxfam HQ after plans were approved by the City Council. Grey Ark Investments Limited applied to turn the building in John Smith Drive in Oxford Business Park into Ox Bio Hub, which would be used as a flexible lab and office space. Oxford City Council's Planning Committee have voted unanimously to approve the plans. The plans include adding an extra floor to the building with a roof plant area and balcony. It also includes providing new external stair cores and lifts, a row of columns outside the building, alterations to existing car parking and landscaping, and the provision of cycle parking, bin stores and equipment stores. The building will also include a gym, cafe, meeting rooms, auditorium and breakouts. There will be multiple tenants for the building, and the developer said it would be able to customise spaces to meet their specific operational needs. The Cowley branch line will connect the business park to the city centre and London Marylebone once it's built. Under the plans, the number of car parking spaces will be reduced from 305 to 227, with another 24 places being removed once the Cowley branch line opens, while 172 cycle parking spaces will be provided. Planning officers for the City Council have recommended that the plans should be approved, subject to conditions. Councillor Alex Hollingsworth recommended that the plans should be approved. Councillor Emily Kerr said, "Oxford really supports applications like this. It's decent quality, it reduces car parking, there's a new walking route that will be used by people on the site, but also by other people. This fits with all our policies. Cycle parking is overprovided. We're getting rid of car parking and providing better public space and better density." Councillors Mary Clarkson and Anna Railton raised the point that this is a rare example of a building being reused rather than being demolished and replaced. Following the decision, Angus Bates, Director of Grey Ark Investments and owner of Oxbio Hub, said, "We are delighted to have secured planning approval, a key milestone in bringing Oxbio Hub to life." The company added that work on the site will begin with immediate effect. Oxfam said it would move to a new premises on the business park when the plans were submitted.
Alice Hopkins finished second in the women's long jump at the UK Athletics Indoor Championships in Birmingham with a jump of 6.22 metres. Miss Hopkins started her career in athletics at Barley Hill Primary School in Tame, and has competed in both long jump and heptathlon events over her sporting career. The athlete was competing for Great Britain at the championships at the arena in Birmingham on Saturday, February the 14th. She said afterwards, "I'm happy with this silver. Obviously, I wanted a bit more with the gold to maintain my title. I feel like I've had a really good indoor season." Wearing the red bib, which indicates that she is the UK lead, is all new for me. I've never had that feeling of coming in as the favourite. With only six girls, it was a very quick competition, over in 40 minutes. Outdoors this summer, we've got Commonwealth Games and Europeans, both in the UK, so they're both my targets to qualify for. Multi-eventer Jade O'Dowda from Kidlington competed in the shot put, setting two indoor personal bests. She described herself as very happy with how it went today. Her next big event will be the World Indoors in Poland in March. It will also be a busy summer with a European Championship in Birmingham and a Commonwealth Games in Glasgow. In the men's 60-metre, 16-year-old Divine Iam from Radley Athletics Club missed the final by thousands of a second, finishing ninth fastest in 6.74, with eight going to the final. A community-owned pub in Wolvercote is continuing to recover after a thief broke in and stole about £4,000. After suffering the overnight theft on January the 11th, the White Hart staged the Big Heart Weekender at the end of January, which brought in double the usual weekend turnover as customers, suppliers and performers all weighed in. The fundraising initiatives have now almost completely covered the pub's losses. The White Hart in Godstow Road was the Oxford Pub of the Week. A member of the community group running the pub said, "On the positive front, the community response has been tremendous and heartwarming." The weekend fundraiser had Godstow Soul and a shanty festival with Man Choir Mutineers and Jolly Grogsters and Short Drag Roger all donating their time and singing. Our suppliers, 434, Twisted Tree Brewery, Oxford Brewery and Carlsberg all donated barrels of beer. We received donations approaching £2,500 from well-wishers and customers over the fundraising weekend, as well as £106 from our Warm Space group. All in all, we were only around £500 short of covering our estimated loss of £4,000. The spokesperson added, "This has been a mighty blow to the business, but not a fatal one. Investigations are ongoing to bring the culprit to justice, but we are moved and energised by the pulling together and support of our local Wolvercote community, both intermittent and regular pub goers, our suppliers, and all those far and wide who have shown their support. The White Hart has been an asset to the community since it was saved from the closure and redevelopment by a dedicated group of volunteers in 2013. Following the incident last month, Alistair Birchall, director of the White Hart, said, "As a not-for-profit organisation operated by a group of volunteers with very small financial margins, this really was a treat for the pub and to the service that we provide to the community. The pub serves as a home to community groups and events ranging from sports clubs to a repair cafe, as well as being a popular spot for socialising. Thames Valley Police has said it is investigating the burglary and has asked anyone with information or who saw the crime to come forward." A force spokesman said at the time, "We are investigating a business burglary that occurred at some time overnight on Saturday the 10th of January and Sunday morning of the 11th of January. The offender is described as a white male, unknown age, average height with a medium build. He had a beard and was wearing jogging bottoms and a hooded top."
Mini owners in Oxford are being invited to take part in a charity drive. The event, now in its sixth year, will start from the mini plant, Oxford, and take participants on a scenic route through Oxfordshire and South Warwickshire, finishing for the first time at Mini UK headquarters. The event supports children's mental health and will return on Sunday 26th of April this year. Freddie St George, organiser of the event, said, "We're absolutely thrilled to be returning to Oxfordshire and the mini plant in Oxford. The mini community has always shown extraordinary generosity, but this year our support for Stop, Breathe, Think gives the event even greater purpose. The work they do is quite literally giving young people a new lease of life, providing timely counselling and support when it's needed most. Mental health in childhood and adolescence shapes everything: confidence, opportunity and future potential. If we can help even one young person feel heard, supported and hopeful again, then every mile we drive will have been worth it. Participants will receive an Italian job themed route book and can look forward to awards at the finish line, including a prize for the oldest mini. Up to 150 minis are expected to take part, forming about a mile line of vehicles, with organisers encouraging families and enthusiasts from across the UK to join the drive. The event raises funds for Stop, Breathe, Think, a national charity providing online counselling and mental health support for young people aged 8 to 21. The charity offers 6 initial 50-minute online counselling sessions, well-being and crisis sessions, and a 24/7 text support service. Since 2020, Stop, Breathe, Think has delivered more than 23,000 counselling sessions to young people in crisis across the UK. Dan Keeley, Community Director at Stop, Breathe, Think, said, Partnering with the Italian job means the world to us, not just because of the huge impact this relationship will have on the thousands of young people who so desperately need counselling, but also because of the wonderful Italian job community Freddie and Julia have galvanised. For us, this new and unique charity partnership feels meant to be, particularly given the Brighton connection with both organisations founded on the South Coast. Registration is now open. Each team, one mini and two people, pays £28, which includes breakfast, Italian job baseball caps, an official road book, an event car sticker, and a fundraising pack. Additional passengers can join for £10 a person, and teams are asked to raise a minimum of £40 in sponsorship. Full details can be found at www.italianjob.com/mile-of-minis/register-mile-of-minis. Those without a mini can still support the event by donating at www.justgiving.com/campaign/2026-mile-of-minis.
Novice Hedgelayers competed in a new contest at Harcourt Arboretum. The event took place on Saturday, February the 28th, and competitors set hedges in either the Midland or South of England styles along the Arboretum hedgerows. It was being run by the Campaign to Protect Rural England, Oxfordshire, in partnership with Wild Oxfordshire and Harcourt Arboretum, and forms part of the National Hedgerow Heroes Project, now in its fifth year. Roger Mortlock, the Chief Executive of the Campaign to Protect Rural England, said hedgerows are a vital part of the landscapes we love. They shape our countryside, but they are also incredibly carbon stores and superhighways for nature. We campaigned for years for the government to set ambitious targets for growing our network of hedgerows, and through Hedgerow Heroes, we are practicing what we preach. Hedge laying is a traditional countryside craft that is both demanding and visually striking, allowing participants to engage in the care and restoration of hedgerows. The Campaign to Protect Rural England's Hedgerow Heroes scheme aims to restore 27 miles of hedgerows across Oxfordshire, encouraging community involvement in nature recovery through hands-on conservation. The competition gave participants the chance to showcase their hedge-laying skills within a 5-hour time frame.
Have we really experienced 50 days of rainfall this year? I simply had to find a poem this month to reflect this. So I chose a poem by a contemporary British poet and author who has gained a huge following for his witty, heartfelt, and relatable poetry. And the poem is entitled Today's Weather Forecast by Brian Bilston. After a wet start to the day, rain will give way to intermittent showers interspersed with outbreaks of rain. There will be further pittering and pattering as the morning progresses, alongside some spitting and splattering, spotting, stotting, splithering, sprinkling and tinkling. Some smearing and sneezing are also likely. Any dabbing, dotting or damping is expected to die down in the late afternoon. When the heavens will open, the clouds will burst, and it will tip it or chuck it down. Please note, there is a risk of falling buckets, stair rods, pitchforks, chair legs, cats and dogs at this time. Cheats are also possible. The deluge will finally let up in the early evening, with some much-needed wet weather will sweep in from the west, resulting in relentless, never-ending drizzle. Tomorrow's outlook. Rain, with occasional intervals of rain. Summary. Nice weather for ducks.
That was the last of our articles for this week. And just a quick reminder, the phone number for the Gosford Hill reunion is 01865 374971. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 074 9606 2280. That's 074 9606 2280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from the previous 4 weeks are available on our website at www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. This current edition is also available on Alexa using the Talking Newspaper skill. Instructions on how to do this are contained in a separate track in this edition. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more news. So until then, we hope you have a good week.